Hello. Before we jump into the show, we need to shout out our awesome new sponsor, Marquee TV.
Man, I was so excited when we got the news about the sponsor. You all might remember from a few weeks ago that I talked about my new Shakespeare project where I'm learning everything I can about Macbeth.
It felt like we said the name Shakespeare out loud and the Marquee people appeared and said, "We gotcha."
It really did.
Yeah.
In case you're not familiar, Marquee TV is a streaming service. They have theater, ballet, opera, documentaries. There's a bunch of behind-the-scenes content of productions. Basically, it's a fun way to nerd out about the arts.
Yeah, it's a streaming service that will take you to the best theaters in the world from the comfort of your own sofa.
I've already added so many things to our watch list. Did you know there's a ballet based on the works of Beatrix Potter?
I did. They've got a little preview video of somebody dancing around in a rabbit costume.
Peter Rabbit doing ballet. I also added a few hip-hop dance shows just to balance out the dancing bunnies.
Yeah, hip-hopera. That's what they call it.
They do. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Mozart's Requiem from the London Philharmonic Orchestra and a bunch of Shakespeare plays, including Richard II, starring my pretend best friend, David Tennant.
And Judi Dench talking about her long relationship with Shakespeare in a master class.
Yeah, I love Judi Dench.
Sure.
But David Tennant.
Yeah, that's quite a battle there.
Okay, there's a special deal for our listeners. Marquee TV is offering 3 months of their service for 99 cents. You get 3 months of all of this good stuff for 99 cents with the code SSOP.
That cost seems absurdly low to me. Like, first, I expected it to be much higher given the quality of the content, but also 99 cents. You can't park next to a theater for 99 cents.
Accurate. Also, if you watch Marquee TV, you get to see these shows maybe wearing your pajamas and hanging out with your cat or your dog.
Yeah. It's a good way to sort of indulge your own curiosity. You can see all the performances of Hamlet, or maybe the first 15 minutes of all of the performances of Hamlet, and you don't have to rope your friends and family into all of that.
Or you could watch Richard II over and over and over and over.
What's the best angle for David Tennant in Richard II?
Trick question. All of them. Anyway, you definitely need to explore the website because there is a ton of really fun, fascinating, engaging stuff on there. I went in specifically looking for Shakespeare, and I found a ton of other things I wanted to watch.
Yeah. You can keep up with what they're doing on social media at Marquee Arts TV. You can visit their website at marquee.tv. That's marquee.tv to get 3 months of their service for just 99 cents with the promo code SSOP. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. And now the show.
Coming up, a thriller about the art of translation.
A doctor explains why your memory might not be what it was.
Plus, our distraction of the week. I'm Mel.
I'm Dave. This is the Library of Lost Time.
I'm fascinated by the work of translators, especially of novels. Just in awe of their ability to capture the style and the emotion of the story while transforming it from its original language to another.
Agree. And they capture character and setting and tone. It's a literary magic trick.
Strong agree. Jennifer Croft is a very successful translator. She's done award-winning work translating Polish, Ukrainian, and Argentine Spanish, which all sound really challenging.
Yeah.
And not related to each other.
No.
She won the 2018 International Booker Prize for her translation of Flights by Olga Tokarczuk. She's also an advocate for including translators' names on the covers of books.
Yeah.
And to that, I'm like, yes? What? Why is this not happening?
Yeah.
I mean, translators aren't just copyists. It's not Google Translate.
Yeah.
They're writers and interpreters. So, to summarize, Jennifer Croft knows the world of literary translation inside out. Her new novel is The Extinction of Irina Ray, and I want to read it right now. Here's the setup. It's 2017. 8 translators from around the world are descending on a Polish village at the edge of the primeval forest for a translation summit.
And I had never considered the idea of a translation summit.
Yeah, it's cool. They all get together to translate the author's new work. They refer to each other by their respective languages. So we meet Spanish, German, English, Serbian, Slovenian, Ukrainian, French, and a newbie to the group, Swedish. They're going to meet each other. They're going to hang out with Irina, their beloved author, and translate her new book. But before they can get down to business, their author disappears.
Oh.
Mm. The rest of the story is the translator's search for the author, Irina, during which they learned hidden secrets about her and each other. The reviews all say that it's a combination of whodunit, thriller, and psychological drama that explores the dark side of celebrity and the art of translation. So it is a whodunit, but it's got literary stuff going on.
Yeah.
The story features a novel within the novel, and that's narrated by Emmy, who is also known as Spanish. She's from Argentina, and she says in the prologue, "Translation isn't reading. Translating is being forced to write a book again." She also has this to say about Irina's original book. I love this so much. The author originally wrote her book in Polish.
Yeah.
"The Polish language comes whooshing through the walls of every paragraph, breaking plates and continually flicking the light switch, creating an atmosphere of wrongness."
That's nice.
I know. I want to read so much more of that.
Yeah.
To describe this book, reviewers are using words like madcap, intriguing, and rambunctious. NPR said, hold on to your chair because this is a good one.
Okay.
"If your head is spinning at the layers here, a novel within a novel that is actually a translation of a Polish novel based on real events written by a non-native Polish speaker, you're exactly where you should be, and you're in for a delightful adventure."
That sounds great.
I can't wait to get lost in this one. It's The Extinction of Irina Ray by Jennifer Croft. I should also mention that if you also enjoy books in translation, we have a list of 27 novels translated from their original languages into English, and they all have a strong sense of place. I'll put the link in show notes.
Okay, so I wonder if this happens to anyone else. A while ago, I put two ideas together, and almost simultaneously, I blew my own mind, and then I thought, I am certainly not the first person to have this idea.
Okay.
And the two ideas are, first, our memories are very fallible, right? We forget things, we remember them wrong, things come and go, odd bits get stored seemingly forever.
Hello, 1970s song lyrics.
Yep.
Why?
Exactly. We make up stories to connect them that have no basis in what happened. Like the internet meme, I am more likely to be able to tell you lyrics from the 70s than why I am currently in the kitchen. Like, I'm here, I walked in here for something, but also, I never meant to cause you any sorrow, I never meant to cause you any pain. I only wanted one time to see you laughing. I only want to see you laughing in the purple rain. The second thing is that our memories are who we are. Our memories inform everything from whether we eat cereal in the morning to the joy we feel when our loved ones walk into the room. The narrative of ourselves and how we think about everyone we know is written in our little gray cells. How do these two things coexist? How are our memories simultaneously flimsy and all-powerful? This seems like a huge design flaw to me. Fortunately, people who are smarter than I am have been thinking about this problem. There's a book that came out 2 weeks ago that I look forward to reading. It's called Why We Remember: The Science of Memory and How It Shapes Us. It's by Dr. Sharon Ranganath. He's a professor at the University of California, Davis, and the director of the Dynamic Memory Lab.
Cool name.
Yeah, it sounds like a sci-fi title. He has been thinking about memories for over 30 years now. And
because he keeps forgetting.
That's funny. I hope he writes it down. Dr. Ranganath is also a musician. He plays guitar in an indie punk band. He's a very learned man, and he's got a lot to say, and he's put it in a book aimed at a general audience. In the book, he writes about why humans are better at forgetting and how memory orients us to new and unexpected things, the relationship between memory and imagination, and why we learn more when we make mistakes. Hmm. Yeah. And he does it all in a very approachable way and throws in quotes from Iggy Pop and Stephen Wright and Snoop Dogg. The book came out just a few weeks ago. It's called Why We Remember, The Science of Memory and How It Shapes Us. It's by Dr. Sharon Ranganath. And now our distraction of the week. A couple of weeks ago, we took a trip to London. I believe we mentioned this.
Still talking about London.
And while we visited many bookstores, that was not the primary reason we went. We went to see some theater. We saw three shows on three nights while we were there. We saw,
which is unprecedented for people who are usually in bed with a book by 9 p.m.
Absolutely. We saw Nye at the National Theater. That's a political drama about the beginning of the UK's national healthcare system, and it was way more fun than that description makes it sound.
Mm-hmm. Starring Michael Sheen,
yeah,
my pretend best friend.
From Good Omens. Mm-hmm. We also took a tour of the National Theater. If you are in London and you like theater, I really recommend that tour. They took us backstage and we saw the three stages there. They had a walkthrough of some of the props and costume areas. It was very fun. An older guide told us stories about the shows that had been there. He was the kind of person who kept referring to Laurence Olivier as Larry. I had somehow forgotten how much I like theater, and this was a fantastic wake-up for that. We also saw Six. That's a musical about the wives of Henry VIII. The conceit there is that they're alive again and they formed a girl group. If you are interested in that idea, I recommend going to a show. It's on Broadway, and they're touring it all over the U.S. and Europe.
And Canada, too.
Yep. It's fun. It's got things to say about those women and how some things haven't changed that much in the last 500 years, particularly if you're a young, pretty girl around powerful men.
I loved how fizzy and energetic and entertaining it was. And then you think about the song lyrics, and it's like, oh.
Yeah.
They really do a great job of taking serious topics and making it smart and fun. And
yeah,
ultimately, the stories are sad, but the feeling when you leave the theater is euphoria. That is a lot of theater magic.
It's a strongly bittersweet show. It's got some sort of remarkable highs. And then there's also a moment in the show when there's a few moments in the show when it's kind of devastating. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there at those, staring at basically the replica of those women and thinking about their lives and what they had to face.
Henry VIII.
Mm. Yeah.
The worst of us.
Good thing we've gotten rid of powerful narcissistic men, huh?
But just to bring that back around, it's a great show. If you like musicals, if you're interested in The Wives of Henry VIII, if you've read Wolf Hall, if you like Hans Holbein's art, all reasons to see that show.
Yeah. But the show I really wanted to tell you about is Guys and Dolls at the Bridge Theater. First, I want to tell you, I have no love for that show. It is a 70-year-old musical about a bunch of street thugs and their girlfriends in the 1930s. The music is okay, but there aren't really any standout numbers for me.
I mean, Luck Be a Lady Tonight is pretty famous.
It is famous, but I don't like that tune very much.
Luck Be a Lady Tonight. Luck, if you've ever been a lady to begin with, luck be a lady tonight.
You might know Bushel in a Peck. I was forced to sing it when I was in choir.
I love you, a bushel and a peck, a bushel and a peck, and a hug around the neck.
You might know Fugue for Tin Horns.
I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, can do.
But that's about it. And the wisdom of that show, the denouement.
It's not good, you guys.
Is that women should marry a guy and then work on changing him.
Marry the man today, rather than sigh and sorrow. Marry the man today and change his way.
try to do it before you get married because that'll bust up their
relationship. Yeah. What horrible advice. Like, we're doing that scene. And it was like, don't do it, ladies. Don't do it.
And they're both great. And the song is really cute. And the chemistry between the two actresses who are singing this song to each other about how they should just marry the guy and then fix him.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The conflicting emotions because they were adorable together.
Yeah. It doesn't feel good. So why did I want to see this production of Guys and Dolls? It's because we had a friend describe seeing it. She told us that it was an immersive production. The audience is standing next to the actors when the actors are singing and dancing. There are times when you can sit on the set. It combines the intimacy of being in the front row of like a standing room only band with some Broadway and West End level performers. It's like a flash mob of an entire show with lights and costumes and a band, and it's happening right around you. So we went, and it was fantastic.
It was, I just get filled with enthusiasm and joy thinking about it all over again.
Yeah, it was so much fun. We walked into the theater, which is effectively a big floor. There are 7 or 8 different platforms that they raise and lower during the show. Cast members dressed like cops direct the audience around so nobody ends up on stage when they're not supposed to be. Some of the actors mull around with the audience and do bits at the beginning of the show, and then they do the show.
You can buy a hot dog when you walk into the theater.
Yeah, you can,
or a hot pretzel.
Or a fedora. And then they do the show. The actors look you in the eye. There was a moment when one of the dancers was swung out over the crowd and it felt like we had to duck. About 3/4 of the way through the show, the leading lady, dressed up for a big burlesque number, looked over and said hello to me.
I got shivers.
I was like, madam, I am married.
She's so pretty.
Yeah. There was a bit when one of the actors told a joke and it kind of fell flat, but Mel laughed.
I guffawed. I thought it was very funny.
And she was the only person in the theater who did so. And the actor kind of looked at her sideways and said, thank you. And then went on with the rest of his bit. And in the end, they cleared all the platforms and the cast danced with the audience while confetti dropped.
It was kind of like being at a really fun wedding at the end.
Yeah, it was super fun. If you happen to be in London and you like theater or, you know, fun, think about Guys and Dolls. And if you're away from London, there are immersive theater productions across the globe. Try Googling for your nearest city and immersive theater, and you'll find everything from art installations you can walk through to improv to horror shows to theater like the Bridge production of Guys and Dolls.
Visit strongsenseofplace.com/library for more on the books we talked about today and details about how you can get immersed in live theater.
Thanks for joining us in the Library of Lost Time. Remember to visit your local library and your independent bookstore to lose some time yourself.
Stay curious. We'll talk to you soon.